Now, prior to 1560, somewhere between 5,000 and 8,000 French Protestants were killed for the faith.
在1560年，大约有5000到8000名法国的改革宗信徒因为他们的宗教信仰而被杀害。
Despite the persecution, Reformed Protestantism continued to grow in France, and churches were established, beginning at Poitiers.
尽管迫害日益残酷，但改革宗的信仰在法国仍然不断的扩展，教会不断的建立。最早的改革宗教会出现在法国的普瓦提耶。
This was known as the mother church of the Huguenots.
那在法国这些改革宗的信徒被称为叫做胡格诺派，所以普法提耶教会被称为是胡格诺派的母会。
The first national synod of the French Reformed Churches of Christ in the Kingdom of France was held in Paris in May of 1559.
在1559年5月，法国境内的改革宗教会的全国第一次大会在巴黎召开。
From its inception, the polity of the French Reformed Church was Presbyterian.
在一开始，法国改革宗就采用了长老制会的这样的一个制度。
The first canon adopted by the 1559 synod read, "No church nor church officer, be he a minister, elder, or deacon, shall claim or exercise any jurisdiction or authority over another."
在第一次大会通过的这个教会章程里面的第一条宣告，无论是教会还是任何教会任职者，不论他们是长老、牧师或执事，都不得声称或实行任何管辖权高于其他教会之上。
All churches were equal, and all officers of the church were equal.
这意味着所有的教会在基督里都是平等的，所有的任职者之间也是平等的。
There were no bishops or other forms of hierarchy.
在这里并没有主教，也没有其他等级化的教会结构。
That first synod also adopted the French Confession of Faith as its confessional standard.
在这次大会上还通过了法国信条作为法国改革宗教会的信仰标准。
The confession was compiled by Antoine de la Roche Chandu and might have been adapted from a draft produced by John Calvin.
这份信条被称为法国信条，很可能是由商蒂尔撰写的，但是这个草稿很有可能是来自于加尔文之手。
As the French Reformed Church grew, the need for trained ministers grew with it.
随着法国教会的迅速增长，受过系统训练的牧师的需求也急剧上升了。
Between 1555 and 1562, Geneva sent 88 ministers to France, which were many fewer than were needed.
在从1555年到62年之间，日内瓦总共向法国派遣了88名受过训练的牧师，但是这个数字远远应付不了在法国的巨大的合场。
Calvin said that people wanted ministers with a desire as great as the sacraments are coveted among papists.
加尔文曾经感叹到，人们对牧师渴望的心情，甚至与天主教徒渴求这个弥撒还要强烈。
The Academy in Geneva was established in 1559 to train pastors.
为了应付这种需要，日内瓦学院于1559年正式成立，开始培训传道人和牧师。
It soon became known as the School of Death because so many of its graduates returned to France and were martyred.
而这所学院不久被人称为是死亡学校，因为许多毕业生回到法国之后都殉道了。
The 1560s began with great optimism in the French Reformed Church.
在1560年代初期，法国改革宗经历了一段非常乐观的时期。
They had as many as 1.8 million members, which was about 10% of the population of France.
当时改革宗信徒在法国大约达到了180万人，占法国总人口的10%左右。
The French Reformed mostly lived in urban areas and were, for the most part, literate.
在法国改革宗信徒主要集中在城市地区，整体受教育程度较高。
They also had a significant number of nobility within the church.
而且许多贵族也加入了改革宗教会。
And the French Reform essentially took over many cities and towns throughout France, either through military conquest or by conversion of the civil magistrate.
在这股势力的推动之下，法国各地的改革宗信徒控制了不少城市城镇，主要是通过两种方式，一种是通过军事的夺取，或者是使地方官员改信。
One Reformed nobleman wrote in 1562, "We have, thanks to God, churches in nearly all the cities of the realm, and soon there will be scarcely a place where one has not been established."
所以在1562年，这个一位胡格诺派的人写贵族写道，他说：“我感谢上帝，我几乎在全国各个城市都看到了改革宗教会。很快，在这座国家里面将没有一个地方没有改革宗的会众。”
Protestant optimism soon diminished when the French wars of religion kicked off later in 1562 with the massacre at Vassy.
然而，这种乐观的情绪很快就被扑灭了。1562年，法国宗教战争正式爆发，其导火索是臭名昭著的瓦西大屠杀。
A Catholic duke was passing through Vassy on his way to Paris when he heard church bells ringing at a time when no Catholic mass would be celebrated.
事情的起因是当时有一位罗马天主教的公爵途经瓦西这个地方前往巴黎，在当地他听到了教堂的钟声敲响，但是他意识到这并不是传统的罗马天主教弥撒的时间。
He sent his men to break up what he knew had to be a Protestant worship service.
因此他马上就意识到了这个钟声敲响实际上是招聚改革宗教会来聚集，而不是天主教的弥撒。
After they met some resistance, they slaughtered dozens, maybe even hundreds of Protestant worshipers.
于是他马上派士兵前去驱散这些改革宗的聚会。士兵遭遇了一些抵抗之后，就开始大开杀戒，杀死了数十人。
And this launched the French Wars of Religion, which were a series of civil wars between Catholics and Protestants.
所以瓦西大屠杀成为了法国宗教战争的起点，是一长串天主教与改革宗之间的内战。
There were three wars in the 1560s alone.
在1560年代就爆发了三次规模较大的战争。
Now each war was a period of intense action that lasted no longer than a year or two.
每一次战争的持续时间虽然不长，一般是一到两年，但是经常伴随非常极端的屠杀行为。
So there were at least eight wars of religion which ended in the 1620s.
整个法国宗教战争的时间经历了八次主要的冲突，直到1620年代才宣告结束。
Now, an attempt at peace between Catholics and Protestants was made in August of 1572.
但是在这一段时期当中，在60年代后期，法国尝试通过一种方式来恢复国内的和平。
Catholic and Protestant nobility assembled in Paris for the wedding of Protestant Henry Bourbon, the King of Navarre, and the Catholic Margaret of Valois, the sister of the King of France, Charles IX.
所以他们想通过这种恢复和平的方式，主要是通过政治联姻的方式。所以在1572年8月，天主教跟改革宗的贵族聚集在巴黎来参加一场具有象征性的联姻的婚礼，其中新郎是改革宗的纳瓦尔国王亨利波庞，而新娘则是属于天主教的这个法国国王的妹妹瓦鲁瓦。
Now Margaret the bride was the daughter of King Henry II and Catherine de Medici, who was the current queen mother.
所以这个新娘子玛格丽特是已故的法国国王亨利二世和王太后凯瑟琳美第奇的女儿。
Catherine de Medici was not interested in peace.
她的妈妈也就是凯瑟琳美第奇表面上推动婚姻是寻求和解，但是她并不是真正想要寻求和解。
She had been plotting for years to eliminate the Protestant leadership and end the movement.
实际上，她长期以来一直策划着如何铲除改革宗的这些贵族领袖，结束这场改革运动。
The Venetian ambassador wrote in 1560, King Francis II, who was Catherine's son and Margaret, the bride's brother, he wanted to fall upon the Protestant leaders, punish them without mercy, and thus extinguish the conflagration.
所以当时一位威尼斯共和国驻法国的大使曾经说，国王法兰索瓦二世，也就是这个新娘子的哥哥，他想要袭击改革宗领袖们，毫不留情地惩罚他们，并且扑灭这场改革的大火。
The target was Admiral Coligny, the leader of the Protestant army during the wars of religion.
而整个的所有的这些攻击的对象是当时的改革宗的军队的领袖，他的名字叫做科里尼。
Let's skip down to
here. Okay.
The assassination plot was hatched.
于是这个阴谋开始酝酿起来。
On August 22nd, 1572, Coligny was shot, but the wound was not life-threatening.
在1572年8月22号，这个改革宗的这个军队的领袖科里尼在巴黎街头遭遇枪击，但是伤势并不严重。
The French crown then resorted to outright genocide.
于是法国王室决定采取更加极端的手段来彻底屠杀改革宗的信徒。
The representative of the Pope said, if the admiral had died from the shot, no others would have been killed.
法国这个教皇在法国的代表曾经非常残忍冷酷的这样评论说，如果这位上将被当时的枪击中就死了，其他的人就不必死了。
The Queen Mother cajoled her son for hours in an attempt to convince him to end the Protestant threat.
凯瑟琳·美第奇连续数小时的劝说他的儿子，促使他下令赶快清除法国境内的改革宗势力。
Finally, he said, "Since you deem it well to kill the admiral, I agree. But all the Huguenots in France must likewise perish, so that not one be left later to find fault with me."
而最后法国国王这样说，他说，既然你们认为必须杀掉那位上将，我也同意。但是法国所有的胡格诺派都必须一并被灭绝，免得日后会有人指责我。
So basically, if we kill one, we have to kill them all.
也就是说，如果我们杀了一个的话，我们就必须把所有的都杀了。
So early in the morning of the 24th of August, which is Saint Bartholomew's Day, Catholic troops entered Coligny's room.
1572年8月24号凌晨，在圣巴多罗买节日的清晨，罗马天主教的军队闯入了科利尼的住所。把他刺死在床头。
They stabbed him in the chest. They threw his body out the window. Then they removed his head.
他们把他杀害了之后，把尸体从窗户扔到街上，并且割下了他的头颅。
This time they made sure he was really dead.
他们想要确保这个人的确死了。
The soldiers then killed all the Protestant nobilities in the vicinity.
随后，士兵在周边地区屠杀了所有改革宗的贵族。
Violent mobs of Catholics soon spread throughout Paris, killing Huguenots.
混乱很快就蔓延开了，这些天主教的暴徒在巴黎街头展开了大规模的屠杀，挨家挨户的搜查胡格诺派的信徒。
The massacre continued for days, with the blood of Protestants flowing in the streets.
在巴黎的街头，这屠杀持续了许多天，整个城市里血流成河。
No one knows how many Huguenots died in Paris. Estimates range from 1,100 to 3,000.
在巴黎，死亡人数难以确定。历史学家估计大约有1,100人到3,000人左右。
The violence then extended into the countryside and into the provinces of France.
暴力并没有止于巴黎城市，屠杀很快扩散到了周边的乡镇和各个的周边地区。
And again, we don't know the exact number of the dead.
我们无法统计这些死亡人数。
So many corpses were thrown into the Rhone River in Lyon, and they drifted downstream to the city of Arles, that residents could not drink the water there for 3 months.
但是据当时史料记载，当时大量的尸体被投入到了罗纳河里，多到下游的阿尔勒城市，当地的居民3个月之内都无法从这河里饮用水。
So the total number of Reformed Protestants who were killed in the St. Bartholomew's Day massacre ranges from 2,000 to 20,000.
所以根据现在的历史学家大概统计，在圣巴多罗买当时之后的几周之内，法国境内被屠杀的基督徒改革宗信徒总数大概是2,000到2万人左右之间。
But the wars of religion continued in the 1570s and the 1580s.
然而，法国的宗教战争仍然持续的在1570年到80年代。
And moderate Catholics began to align themselves politically with Protestants, an alliance known as the Malcontents.
但是，随着战争的持续消耗，一些温和的天主教贵族开始寻求在政治上的折中，他们开始与改革宗的贵族结盟， 他们这个联盟称为叫做不满者党。
The motivation was political rather than spiritual.
这个联盟的动机并不是出于宗教，而是出于政治。
But the influence of these malcontents led to an edict in 1576, which allowed the French Reformed freedom to worship except in the city of Paris.
不满者党的政治影响最终促成了1576年的勃略敕令，这个使得当时法国的改革宗信徒开始有了一定的宗教自由。
They could worship no closer than 5 miles from the capital.
他们被允许在巴黎以外的地区公开敬拜，但是不得进入到巴黎的5公里以内的领土范围。
And such compromise angered the staunch Catholics.
那这些法国的妥协让步激怒了极端的天主教势力。
So they formed the Catholic League with the support of the King of Spain.
他们在西班牙国王腓力二世的支持之下组建了更加强硬的军事联盟，叫做天主教联盟。
By the end of the 1580s, France was divided not only Catholic versus Protestant, but also moderate Catholics versus the Catholic League.
所以到了80年代末期，法国不仅分裂成为天主教跟改革宗两派，而且在天主教阵营内部分裂出了温和天主教和这种强硬派的天主教。
The King of France, Henry III, was assassinated by a Dominican monk in 1589.
1589年，法国国王亨利三世被刺杀身亡。
The rightful heir to the throne was the Protestant Henry Bourbon, the King of Navarre.
根据继位的顺序，这个纳瓦拉国王亨利波旁是一位改革宗的君主，将会成为法国的合法继承人。
He was the groom of the wedding at St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre.
他是当时这个大屠杀里面的新郎。
Henry was a great military leader, and he took control of the entire country of France, but he could not capture Paris.
这位亨利·波旁是一位非常出色的军事领袖，他很快掌握了法国大部分的地区，但是他始终无法攻下巴黎城。
And finally,In 1593, Henry converted to Catholicism, and he reportedly said, "Paris is worth the mass."
很不幸的是1593年，他出于政治的考量，宣布改信天主教。据说他说了一句传世的名言，他说：“巴黎值得一场弥撒。”
So basically, the French crown is more important than his religious convictions.
因此，对于他来说，得到法国国王的这个皇冠比他的宗教立场更加重要。
After nearly 5 years of fighting for universal recognition of his reign, the accession of Henry IV to the throne in Paris in 1594 helped to end the religious civil wars that had plagued France for nearly 50 years.
因此，1594年，亨利波旁，也就是亨利四世，在巴黎正式登基，他的加冕也标志着。法国长达半个世纪的宗教战争基本上结束了。
Tensions remained, but Henry's reign did bring some measure of peace between Protestants and Catholics and between Catholics and Catholics.
虽然有一些 地方的局势仍然没有完全消除，但是亨利四世的统治的确带来了和平，不只是天主教和改革宗之间的和平，也是天主教内部的温和和强硬派之间的和平。
The new king allowed Protestant worship on Sundays at the home of his sister, Catherine, and at the Louvre on Wednesdays and Fridays.
亨利四世在位之后行使了更加宽容的宗教政策，他允许改革宗信徒在他的姐姐凯瑟琳波旁家中进行主日敬拜，并且允许改革宗信徒在卢浮宫每周三和周五举行聚会。
The Louvre was a royal palace in those days before it became a museum.
卢浮宫在当时是属于皇室的一个宫殿，现在变成了博物馆。
After an assassination attempt in December of 1594 by a former student at a Jesuit college who claimed to have been inspired by the Jesuits to kill the king, Henry expelled the Jesuits from France.
但是宗教仇恨在这个时候依旧存在。在1549年12月，一位受到耶稣会影响的神学生企图刺杀亨利四世。这事之后，亨利就下令把整个耶稣会驱逐在法国之外，遏制了他们在法国的影响。
He issued the Edict of Nantes in April of 1598, which allowed for temporary coexistence of Protestants and Catholics.
亨利四世在1598年4月颁布了著名的南特敕令，允许新教徒和天主教徒暂时共存。
The edict granted Huguenots freedom of worship, but only in the homes of nobles or on the outskirts of a town.
这个敕令允许胡格诺派，也就是改革宗的敬拜的自由，但是这个自由仅限于在贵族的私人住宅里，或者是城镇的周边地区。
It required Huguenots to observe all the Catholic feast days and to pay the ecclesiastical tithe.
这个敕令要求改革宗信徒遵守所有的天主教的节日，并且交纳教会的十一税。
Henry's ultimate goal was the religious reunification of France with one king, one faith, one law.
所以亨利四世的最终极的目标是使法国重新的统一在一个国王、一个信仰和一部法律之下。
He never intended for the edict to be a path for the full toleration of Protestants in France.
南特敕令从来不是要最终达到法国境内完全的宗教宽容的这个手段。
And when a delegation of Catholic judges from the Parliament of Paris appeared at the Louvre to express their objections to the Edict of Nantes, Henry warned them not to make any allegations against my Catholic religion.
当巴黎的学院的天主教法官代表团前往卢浮宫表达对南特敕令的不满的时候，亨利警告他们说，你们不要对我天主教的信仰提出任何的指控。
He said, I love it more than you do. I am more Catholic than you.
我比你们更爱天主教，我比你们更是天主教徒。
I am the eldest son of the church, which none of you are or can be.
我是教会的长子，而你们没有一个人是，也不可能是。
You deceive yourselves if you think that you are good with the Pope. I am better than you.
如果你们自以为与教皇的关系好的话，那你们就错了。我和教皇的关系比你们更好。
The Parliament then ratified the Edict of Nantes 2 weeks later.
所以这次谈话之后，巴黎的高等法院最终通过了南特赦令。
But any reformed hopes for enduring religious toleration in France ended on May 14th, 1610.When a Roman Catholic with connections to the Jesuits assassinated Henry IV.
而法国改革宗对持久的宗教宽容的希望也在1610年5月14日那天终结了。在那天，一名与耶稣会相关的狂热分子刺杀了亨利四世。
After Henry's death, hostilities between Catholics and Protestants more frequently erupted into violence, including the destruction of the Reformed Protestant Church at Charenton outside Paris.In 1621,
亨利死后，天主教跟改革宗之间的敌对再次爆发起来，暴力事件频发，其中包括1621年巴黎郊外的沙朗通教改革宗教堂的毁坏。所以这个是沙尔通教堂的当时的一个绘画的。
The city of La Rochelle, the last remaining Protestant stronghold, fell to Catholics in 1628 after a siege.
改革宗在法国的最后一座碉堡就是拉洛谢尔，在长期围困之后也最终陷入到了罗马天主教之手。
So the French wars of religion came to an end in 1629.
法国宗教这个自由在阿莱赦令1629年阿莱赦令标志着这些宗教自由的结束。
Although the dream of a Protestant France had ended, the French Reformed Church flourished after the wars of religion.
虽然建立一个新教的法国的梦想破灭了，但是法国的改革宗教会在整个宗教战争期间和之后仍然有非常显著的发展。
They settled into their defined status as heretics in a Catholic country.
他们现在终于可以承认自己在一个天主教国家里面作为异端的存在的地位。
Despite their political and cultural defeat, French Reformed Church membership held steady.
尽管在政治和文化上屡次挫败，但是法国的改革宗教会的成员数量依旧非常的稳定。
And Catholics and Protestants learned how to coexist in a country with one faith, one king, and one law.
天主教徒和改革宗信徒逐渐学会了在一个信仰一个国王、一部法律的国家当中共存。
And the French Reform prospered under the Edict of Nantes until King Louis XIV began to erode their rights in the years prior to the revocation of the Edict.
在南特敕令之下，法国的改革宗教会一度的繁荣，直到路易十四废除了敕令前许多年，才是逐渐的削弱他们的权力。
Many Reformed churches were torn down, the singing of psalms was prohibited, seminaries were closed, and conversion to Protestantism was prohibited.
许多改革宗的教堂被拆毁，诗篇的吟唱被禁止，神学院被关闭，改信改革宗的新教被视为是非法的行为。
Some children of Reformed parents were taken from their homes by the order of the king and raised in Catholic schools and convents.
国王甚至下令将部分改革宗家庭的孩子带走，送进天主教的学校跟修道院进行抚养。
Perhaps the most effective tactic for facilitating conversions from Reformed to Catholic in the years prior to the revocation of the Edict of Nantes was the quartering of soldiers in Reformed households.
在敕令被废除之前，或许最有效的方式手段是将，是一种被称为叫做龙骑兵寄宿的方式，那就是将士兵驻扎在改革宗信徒的家里。
The Dragonade, as the quartering was known, resulted in tens of thousands of conversions in 1 year.
这个龙骑兵寄宿的政策在短短一年之内就造成了数以万计的改革宗信徒改宗成天主教。
So having a Catholic soldier in your home was an effective evangelism strategy.
所以当时天主教传福音的就是给他们宣教的方式就是派一个天主教的士兵进到你家里面去住。
With most of their rights already stripped away, the Reformed were not surprised by the signing of the revocation of the Edict of Nantes in October of 1685 by King Louis XIV.
当他们大多数的权力已经被剥夺的情况之下，改革宗信徒对路易十四在1685年所签署的南特敕令的禁止令并不感到意外。
The king officially banned Reformed worship. He required the demolition of all Reformed churches. And he banished pastors who did not convert to Catholicism within 2 weeks.
Louis XIV 正式的禁止改革宗的敬拜，下令拆毁所有改革宗的教堂，并且命令在2周之内，如果不改信天主教的牧师必须离开法国。
The revocation also prohibited Reformed Protestants from leaving France, but many thousands ignored this prohibition. They escaped to places like Switzerland, Holland, England, South Africa, and to North America.
所以刚才提到说是没有改信天主教的牧师们必须离开，但是没有改信天主教的信徒他们不能离开，他们不可以离开法国，但是依旧许多的人无视这个禁令，逃亡到瑞士、荷兰、英格兰、南非或者北美这些地方。
Although many Reformed continue to practice their faith in private, the revocation officially ended the thriving French Reformed Church of the 16th and 17th centuries.
许多人在暗中在私下继续持守他们改革宗的信仰，这个敕令实际上终结了16、17世纪那个充满生命力的法国的改革宗教会。
The French Reformed who remained in France took their faith underground.
那些留在法国的改革宗信徒将他们的信仰转入了地下。
Despite the king's declaration in 1715 that he had ended all exercise of the Protestant religion in France,Reformed Protestants were still worshiping.
虽然路易十四在1715年宣布他已经彻底终结了法国境内一切的新教活动，但是实际上改革宗信徒依旧秘密的聚会敬拜。
So when the French issued the Edict of Toleration in 1787, hundreds of thousands of Reformed Protestants still remained.
因此到了1787年，法国颁布了宽容敕令。也就是所有的宗教对吧，就是包括对新教开始宽容，在当时全法国依旧有数十万的改革宗信徒顽强地存留了下来。
Well, what can we learn from the French Reformed of the Reformation era about how to live as a minority in a majority world?
在讲过了这一段法国宗教改革历史之后，我们要来思想一下我们能从这段历史得到什么教训，那就是我们如何在一个社会当中作为少数群体来生活。
From their beginning, the French Reformed consciously rejected the practices of radical reformers and Anabaptists of the 1520s and 30s.
自从法国宗教改革开始， 法国的改革宗信徒就有意识地拒绝了20年代、30年代的那些激进改革派，也就是重洗派的做法。
Many Anabaptist groups established their own communities far removed from mainstream society.
许多重洗派的团体选择了脱离社会，建立一个自给自足的独立社群。
We see remnants of such practices today, even in North America, in Mennonite and Amish communities.
所以像今天我们在美国依旧看到这种门诺会和阿米什人，这些都是当年的重洗派的这些后代。
But the French Reform did not retreat from French culture, they tried to reform it.
然而法国的改革宗信徒没有逃避当时的法国的主流文化，而是尝试着去改革它。
Some radical groups in Germany attempted to overthrow the civil government and establish their own rule.
但是在重洗派当中还有一部分激进的团体，他们试图去推翻世俗政权，建立自己独立的统治。
The War of the Common Man of the 1520s was an attempt to overturn the social order with the lower classes replacing the upper class.
在1520年代的农民战争运动就是这样的一个激进的运动，他们试图下层阶级取代上层阶级，去改变当时现有的社会制度。
Although their Catholic opponents associated them with these radical groups and accused them of being insurrectionists, the French Reform never launched a revolution intending to eliminate the nobility or the monarchy.
虽然在罗马天主教的眼中，他们常常把改革宗与这些激进的重洗派这些革命分子混为一谈，指控他们试图叛乱，但是作为法国改革宗信徒自身，他们从来没有发起过革命来消灭贵族或者推翻君主制。
As we saw in Calvin's preface to the King in the Institutes, the French Reformed initially tried to convince the King of the veracity of the Reformed faithusing arguments, not swords.
正如我们在加尔文的基督教要义的序言当中，也就是他写给法兰西一世的这个封书信里面，他提到法国的改革宗是尝试以辩论的方式来说服国王相信改革信仰，而不是以武力反叛的方式。
Calvin argued that Reformed Protestantism adhered to the Nicene Creed and was the historic Christian faith of the New Testament and the Church Fathers.
加尔文的辩论是改革宗信仰是真正持守尼西亚信经的信仰，是与新约圣经和教父传统一致的信仰。
We would do well as Reformed Protestants today to adopt Calvin's tactic of making arguments for the truth of Reformed Protestantism and its values in the common kingdom.
作为今天的改革宗信徒，我们应当效法加尔文的策略，那就是以理性的辩论来向世人呈现我们的信仰和价值，在公共领域当中与这个世界对话。
Based on our understanding of the biblical teaching on natural law and the image of God and man, we can attempt to reason with non-Christians in the civil realm.
因为我们相信圣经所教导的自然法以及上帝的形象，也就是人是照着上帝形象所造的，因此我们可以和我们的非信徒的邻舍在这个社会当中进行有理性的交流。
We can make arguments for the freedom of religion in order to practice our faith unhindered by the civil magistrates.
我们可以去论证宗教自由的必要，使信仰的实践不受到国家权力的阻止。
We can make arguments for a biblical understanding of human rights with regard to abortion, marriage, privacy, the sovereignty of the individual over his or her body.
我们可以通过理性论证圣经所揭示的人权问题，涉及到堕胎、婚姻、隐私以及个人身体主权等等议题。
Calvin knew, as we do, that ultimate hope is not found in establishing just laws and moral standards.
加尔文深知最终极的盼望并不来自于制定公正的法律或者维持道德秩序。
Ultimate hope is found only in the gospel.
真正的盼望唯独来自于福音。
So while we use arguments to make advancements with non-Christians in the common kingdom for the betterment of society, our primary focus is on the preaching of the gospel and the conversion of sinners to Christ.
因此，虽然我们在公共的国度当中以我们的理性辩论向我们的非信徒的邻舍，去与他们对话，推进这个社会的改良，但是我们首要的使命仍然是传扬福音，使罪人归向基督。
We cannot be distracted from our mission as the church by attempting to improve the quality of life in this present evil age.
作为教会，我们不应该把注意力转移到离开这个福音的呼召，转移到改善今生生活品质等等这些社会问题上。
The preaching of the gospel, not social work, is what transforms hearts.
真正能够改变人心灵的，并不是社会改革，而是福音的宣讲。
Now, some today are calling for a form of Christian nationalism, even the reestablishment of Christendom.
在今天，有一些人，甚至包括有一些自称是改革宗的人，他们提倡某种形式的基督教国家主义，或者甚至他们宣称要重建基督教王国、基督教国度。
Typically, they don't advocate for the forming of an army or taking on the forces of the secular state in a military conflict.
但是通常他们并不会宣称要组织军队与世俗国家展开军事对抗。但是他们假设基督教民族主义者在文化战争中会取胜。
But if somehow these Christian nationalists won the culture war and they found themselves in charge of a state,Biblical laws and values would be established as a civil law, including the outlawing of non-Christian religions.
但如果这些基督教国家主义者或者民族主义者，他们真的在这场文化战争当中取胜了，他们掌握了国家的政权，他们将试图以圣经的律法和价值观来取代这种民事法律，其中包括禁止非基督教宗教的存在。
So how do you enforce that? What if the non-Christian wants to continue practicing his non-Christian religion?
但是问题随之而来，那就是这些基督教国家主义者们他们所鼓吹的这种律法，如果假如他们真的执政了，该如何执行？那些非基督徒，他们如果想要继续坚持实践自己的信仰，我们该如何做？
You can ask him nicely to stop and to embrace Christianity.
你可以礼貌地劝诫他停止他的信仰，并且邀请他接受耶稣基督。
But at some point, the enforcement of the law in a Christian nationalist context would require some degree of physical coercion.
但是如果他拒绝，那么所谓的基督教国家或者基督教国家主义的律法执行起来，就必须在某种程度上来执行暴力手段。
Is this what we see in the New Testament?
而这是否是我们在新约圣经当中所看到的
？Now the Old Testament depicts national Israel living in a typological theocratic kingdom.
当然，我们在旧约当中的确看到了以色列国是一个预表性的神权政体。
But we in the New Testament era live as exiles from our heavenly home.
但是在新约圣经当中，圣经明确地告诉我们，我们在这世上是客旅，是寄居者。
We don't use physical coercion to advance Christ's kingdom.
新约圣经并没有命令我们使用肉体的暴力来扩张基督的国度。
Paul says in 1 Corinthians 10 verses 4 and 5, For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but have divine power to destroy strongholds. We destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God, and take every thought captive to obey Christ.
正如保罗在哥林多后书第十章所说的，我们征战的兵器不是属血气的，乃是在神面前有能力，可以攻破坚固的堡垒，将各样的计谋、各样拦阻人认识神的自高之事一概都攻破了，将人的心意夺回，使他们顺服基督。
Unlike the French Reformed, we don't need armies with swords.
与法国改革宗这些军队不一样，我们不需要刀剑。
We need well-trained pastors to preach the gospel by which the Holy Spirit expands the kingdom of God.
但是我们需要的是受过精良装备的牧师们去宣讲福音，来拓展神的国度。
And we need well-equipped men and women to live as faithful Christians in the common kingdom, like the prophet Daniel in Babylon, engaging the culture but not trying to Christianize it.
我们需要的是那些真正忠心敬虔的信徒，像旧约的先知但以理在巴比伦生活那样，虽然他身处异乡，但他坚守自己的信仰，在文化中做光做盐，但他从来不企图使文化基督化。
We should live as the church under the cross, sojourning in a foreign land until we reach our ultimate home.
我们应当活出在十字架下的教会的样式，在这个异乡之地寄居，以忍耐见证等候，直到我们抵达永恒的家乡。
In our next lecture, we'll look at Pierre Dumoulin, a pastor who lived under the cross.
在接下来，下午的第三讲，我们将讨论一个历史人物，就叫做 Pierre Dumoulin， 他是在法国当时在十字架下侍奉的一位牧者。这是我们今天的第二堂的讲座，谢谢大家。